Surf.
Welcome to the New York Times Podcast, your 1,001st cut of music and news and criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica.
Surfing. Woo! Gonna ride the wave. Your eyes are just like a tape. Gonna ride the wave. My body will fill up a safe. Gonna ride the wave. Coming for days. Ride the wave. They trying to find where I stay.
I had it locked with a ledge to see who work in. It just was a tent. Virgil been sending me drunk to see if I like it or rocking with it. There go little mama. I don't want to because she burning. She tripping.
I'm waving.
Smoke with the slack, we can meet in the kitchen.
Whoa.
I'm burning the ham, these so-called gangsters don't know how to approach the man. I chop up his friends, his mamas, and all of his kids.
Whoa.
I come with the lid, I chop out the top of the beans on Dollar Gish beers. They came with the shred, I told them to chop off, you keeping your head.
I had a drone with a K and it's fully loaded, playing this.
Whoa.
Catch it down bad, you know I'm your wife, I'm not spending. Shot it so tight, I had to. They ain't come from my tribe, I can barely say they hit.
You're listening to Surf by Young Thug, Slacked with Gunna, Slacked 2. It's off So Much Fun. It's a new Young Thug album, depending who you're talking to. Maybe it's his debut album. Maybe it's his ninth album. Who can tell anymore? The internet has completely obliterated all old boundaries and has rewritten the rules of consumption of popular music, which we have spoken about on Popcast ad nauseum. But there's something we haven't talked about on Popcast, and I got to be honest, the impetus and the idea for this episode did not emanate from me. It emanated from the gentleman to my right. Teddy Blanks is here.
Hello.
Teddy, what's good?
Well, you know, it's interesting. You say it could be his first album to some people. It's definitely the first Young Thug album I have listened to all the way through.
And the reason for that is because you got excited about the album art.
It knocked me out.
So here on Popcast, maybe you know, we're a podcast.
Oh, I know.
It's an audio experience.
I'm a big fan.
We're in the earbuds. And if we're in an AirPod, if you're listening to, also sidebar, if you're listening in an AirPod right now, just know that I'm judging you.
I didn't bring it up.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So we were messaging. Well, first of all, we go back.
Yeah, we go back.
What is the name of the pizza place in Great Barrington?
Baba Louie's?
Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Shout out to Baba Louie's.
We were attending a wedding.
Yes.
There was a day where we had nothing to do while some other people we knew were off being in the wedding. So
good for them.
Good for them. So you and I, we had to go get some pizza somewhere.
Yes. And I remember, if I'm not mistaken, were the salads at that place like ginormous?
I believe they were huge salads.
Yeah, yes. I have like a memory of it being almost as big as the pizza.
Yeah, and great pizza, by the way. If you're ever in Great Barrington, Massachusetts,
go hit that.
Check it out.
So Teddy and I were messaging, and Teddy is like, have you seen the Young Thug album cover? Like, I'm really into it. I'm like, I guess I've seen it. You know, like, I haven't really thought about it. Like, because I don't really think about album covers anymore, which is absurd for a person who grew up fetishizing and celebrating and really scrutinizing the details of them. And Teddy's like, you got to look at the album cover. And you start sending me screen grabs of the high-res little sections of it.
It took me a minute. You have to kind of dig into the Google image search, like super high-res, to actually find the version that you can really look at. But the reason I stumbled upon it in the first place, I mean, I kind of had to force myself to look at new music because the Spotify Discover playlist knows me a little too well.
Wow.
It's like kind of like, you know, would you like this new Boz Scaggs track? I'm like, safe bet, but
there new Boz Scaggs tracks?
Or just maybe like a deep cut.
I was going to say. Shout to Boz Scaggs.
In any case, so I kind of had to go out of my comfort zone to find new music. So I just kind of trawl the, you know, new releases page for album covers that I think are interesting.
To draw you in.
Yeah, so the Young Thug cover pops up. I've heard him on other songs. I've heard a few of his singles. I like his sound.
Mm-hmm.
But the cover, I could tell, had something interesting going on. It's his face.
And we should also, we didn't even say why Teddy Blanks is the authority to speak on this stuff.
Sure.
So Teddy is a graphic designer. He is one of the founders of a design studio. It's called Chips. On an earlier podcast, not that long ago, we spoke about a lot of recent music films, one of which was Her Smell. Teddy did all the vintage-y album art and posters for that film. You may have seen I retweeted something that he tweeted at us about that. You also do film titles. Shout out some film titles. Let these people know.
Sure, I did titles for Lady Bird.
Oh!
Did titles for Can You Ever Forgive Me?
Flex Bomb!
The Old Man and the Gun. Russian Doll, the Netflix TV series.
Shouts to Natasha Lyonne, who I once saw at the Barney's Warehouse sale.
Love her. In any case, I guess my qualifications are that I've done fake album covers a movie.
Well, to be honest, in the year of our Lord 2019,
yeah,
all album covers kind of feel a little fake.
That's true, and that's what we were talking about today. Yeah. And I don't want to denigrate the work of fellow graphic designers.
No.
But we're here to talk about mostly what works online versus what works...
The Thug album in particular, right?
Yeah.
And just so people know, because Teddy, we couldn't figure out originally who designed it. I sent a DM to Alex Toomey. Peace to Alex Toomey. Y'all know him as Young Thug's engineer. I once spent a night with him and Thug in a studio somewhere in Midtown in a very sketchy looking building recording a bunch of songs. So I sent Alex a DM who designed it, and he came back. It's a BLB, who I also saw reporting that same story. BLB directs a lot of the Thug videos.
Oh.
And Fano, or Fano, I don't know, it's F-A-N-O, I don't know who this is, but that they designed the album cover together. So, you're a fan.
I'm a big fan. I'll have to go look up their other album artwork after this, because I could not figure out who did it just by Googling myself.
So again, this being an audio product, we're going to have to do a lot of things where we talk about things that we have seen.
Yeah, so it's a
what
picture.
What is the cover?
It's a
from
picture
a
of Young Thug's face, an illustration of his face.
Seems fine.
Seems fine. It's on green, looks like grass. I just noticed the reason you can tell it's on a giant field is because there's a shadow of an airplane flying over in the upper left-hand corner, and that gives you context.
A little perspective.
Right, I didn't notice that at first. So. Mm-hmm. So you can tell by looking at the thumbnail image on Spotify that it's clearly made up of a bunch of other small things.
Mm-hmm.
Unclear what those things are at that size. I wanted to know. So I found the super high-res Google image, and I started to zoom in and look at it.
I'd love to know what Ukrainian bootleg site had the super high-res.
It was very high-res. And you should, put the link on the podcast notes or whatever to the super high-res so people can spend some time looking around.
Maybe we'll try to put, just the blown-up sections on the page somewhere.
Some details.
All right, we'll try. Or I'll tweet them. Worst case, we'll tweet them.
It's made up of a bunch of tiny young thugs standing around.
Stop the madness.
It's a bunch of tiny young thugs, and it's clearly all from the same photo shoot because they're all wearing the same outfit, the same sort of black shirt, and except for when he's portraying the bling on, his lip ring, his necklace, then he's wearing a white shirt and he's shining.
Am I right? Is he looking up at a camera in the sky in a lot of these images?
Sometimes.
These tiny thugs.
Yeah. Some of them are looking up. One of them is looking down at his feet, I see.
Mm-hmm. So we're talking 100 thugs.
I'd go more.
150, 200.
That sounds about right.
That's a lot of thugs.
Different sizes. Some of them are giants compared to the other smaller thugs on here. And then... the cherry on top is in the upper right-hand corner, there is a thug with a lawnmower mowing the album title So Much Fun into the grass.
Phenomenal.
Phenomenal.
Great. And you sent me a message and you were like, this is the peak of Photoshop.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the execution's actually pretty good. I mean, when you really get super close up, you can see the seams a bit, but hey, I mean, I don't know. I think it's really, really well done. And actually, the final effect when you zoom out is pretty elegant looking, I think.
It's so hard for me to see it at small size now that you've shown me the up close.
But what's amazing about it is actually it works both ways.
Yeah.
It has managed to solve the major problem of album art in the digital age, which is that it works as a thumbnail, looks kind of like just a cool illustration of his face. Although, when I looked at Twitter to see what the chatter was about the album cover, most of it was just people being like, that doesn't look like him. It looks like this other person.
Oh, wait, who did they say? Look,
several different people.
Oh, other people.
That, yeah, there just were just like lots people. Of other okay. other rappers that people were saying it looked more like than it looked like Young Thug. I wouldn't know.
And it's funny because now looking at it now
yeah.
that we've had this conversation, it's kind of all I can see.
Yeah, it's very clear.
It's
what
like
it is.
All I can see. But I understand why it's not evident. And when you were looking around online, you said basically no one had identified this?
I mean, when I did some real deep digging, I found some other people saying, hey, did you notice that Thug was made up of a bunch of other thugs? Or, that all those people standing on the grass are Thug. I mean, it seems like people have figured it out. I didn't see an article about it. Nobody was like, check out this crazy album cover. Look at it,
You mean
like a BuzzFeed list with a bunch of snapshots of the details of the thing. I mean,
what
I would
about,
have expected that.
An SPD in-house article, Society of Professional Designers. No. Where are they?
Oh, certainly nobody's talking about it in the design community.
Come on, man. All my graphic designers who are listening right now, lobby your local trade publications to cover the Young Thug album cover, please. There's real art happening here.
Absolutely. So this got me thinking, like, about what kinds of album art work in the thumbnail context on Spotify, where we see them. And there are versions of classic albums that translate really well one-to-one. If you think about Bruce Springsteen, Born in the USA, it's like a picture of a guy in jeans. He's in front of an American flag. Mm-hmm. Boom, it's iconic. It's an uninflected shot.
It's crisp.
You see it online. It works just as well in that tiny postage stamp size as it does when you're holding the vinyl. And the same goes for illustration-based covers, like, you know, Andy Warhol's banana cover for the Velvet Underground.
Absolutely.
Or the prism on Pink Floyd. I mean, you think about those. Those also
an allegedly famous band that I don't know about.
Yeah, well, I got a lot of Pink Floyd album covers right here in this book, actually.
Yeah, so to sort of explain how we're going to go today, how we're going to do this episode, there are a couple things. One, Teddy brought a bunch of books, and we're going to look at things, and we're going to talk about some of the design principles at play. Because fundamentally, the design principles in the digital era and streaming era, I think, are different than the CD era and certainly different than the vinyl era.
Absolutely.
Which we learned about an hour and a half ago because Popcast took a field trip to Urban Outfitters on 35th and Broadway. Urban Outfitters, which I had thought was the leading American retailer of vinyl, but apparently it's Amazon. I don't want to be like, you know, I don't want to get some fact check email.
Sure.
It's up there. They sell a lot of vinyl at Urban Outfitters.
It's the only clothing retailer I can think of where you can walk in and there's a small record store within the rest of the
where all the vinyl retail is like space. $38.
Yeah. It's really insane how pricey it is.
I knew that vinyl was expensive. I bought online a Sam Hunt 7-inch from UrbanOutfitters.com, and it was like $14.
It's a lot for a 7-inch.
It's a lot for a 7-inch. That's not like on a hardcore label from 1983. This vinyl is extremely pricey.
Fully 10 copies of Big Willie Style for $33 on vinyl.
Go cop that. I mean, I know if anybody's going to buy that, they're probably listening to a podcast. Yeah. So, like, go run to Urban Outfitters and get that. But we took a field trip to sort of get a sense of, number one, what are the current design principles that are setting the tone for what album art looks like? And does the album art that worked in a digital context work in a real physical context or vice versa? And we learned a lot of things.
We learned a lot of things.
Should we start with some of the things we saw?
I think so, yeah. I mean, the first thing that comes to mind, you've got the photos on your phone.
Well, first of all, we should say we tried to go to Target to look at CDs, but the Target in Herald Square.
One CD. It just has new copies of the Taylor Swift album. That's it.
It was like a little sad.
It was a little sad.
Like, there's a Target. I go to the one in Brooklyn, Atlantic Center. They have, like, you know, like a rack of CDs.
And we went and asked someone. We said, where are the CDs? Where are the other CDs? And she pointed to the display we had already seen of Taylor Swift.
That
and said,
we were standing
next
to. That's
it. That's the only CD we have.
I've never felt older.
No, I mean, yeah, if we were actually out looking for CDs to buy, if that's all we had to play music on,
that's true.
We would be screwed.
What would we put in our Discmans?
I don't know.
Anyway, we went through a lot at Urban Outfitters. So let's start with this, because this touches on something we spoke about yesterday. Here's the 2 Chainz album cover for Rap or Go to the League.
Ah, yes.
Okay, so before we get into the philosophy of this album cover, let's play Rule the World, which is 2 Chainz and Ariana Grande off of Rap or Go to the League.
2 Chainz. Top down on the dime like I'm used to. Brainy make it home like I'm used to. Brainy make it home like I used to. Brainy make it home like I'm used to. Top down on the dime like I'm used to. Brainy make it home like I used to. Brainy make it home like I used to. I realize we could rule the world. I realize we could rule the world.
Yeah. fell in love with a real one, that's a dedication. Had him patiently waiting for a revelation. Even when I ain't around, ain't no separation. Your skin smooth, your eyes brown, and you're far from basic. Then we go to different places with no suitcase. But when we come back, we got suitcases. Right now, I use love for a medication. Back in the day, I shoot Cupid with no hesitation. I got more than 40 acres for my reparation. The end my navigation, that my destination. Please don't never tell on me, baby. That mean don't call 12 on me, baby. As long as the meal prepared for me, baby. The meals I prepare.
So, Teddy, describe to the people what's going on this 2 Chainz album cover.
It's a photograph of an old record bin, the kind of things that DJs would have carried around and had records in, which is about 80% actual size, I think we decided.
Because you can't fit a record inside a bin that is smaller than a record because it has to be drawn on the record, just for clarity.
Exactly. It's presented very cleanly on a white background, and it's kind of part of a trend we were talking about, which is kind of paying tribute to physical media on digital album covers.
Say the word.
Yeah.
Say the word.
The fetishization.
That's right. That's right.
Of physical media on digital album covers.
That's right. Now, this happens to be a physical version of it, but still.
Yes, but we were sort of talking about.
This is a real thing that we've seen in other contexts. Yeah, you saw it in
Yeezus.
Yeezus, for
which
sure.
Which is the sort of proto example, which you know.
Shout out Virgil. Shout out Peter Saville.
Peter Saville kind of rips off a design he did for New Order in 2001. Sort of a more recent example is the Post Malone cover, which, if you look at it online, is a picture of a kind of intricately designed jewel case, yellow and black, and it's sitting on a white background. And the actually reason for this trip was, I said, what do you get when you go to the store and you buy the Post Malone CD? Do you get the CD that's in the picture, or do you get a CD that has the picture of the CD on it? Well, we found out.
We'll get to that in a bit. I also want to shout out, I was trying to forget where I was on the dark web, somewhere in deep, dark internet, and I found a G-Eazy B-Sides collection, which was recently released.
I saw that.
You saw it, which was like looked like a faded record that would be in your crate where you can see the outline of the record around
It's sort of distressed. It looks like it's been hanging around in the
right,
back of your
like
crate
it's been
for a while.
Like, right, like it's been in my closet in the crate just like hiding for 20 years.
Yeah, the Nas Lost Tapes cover too, which is kind of a slightly abstracted version of it where the tape is kind of made out of old marble or something.
Well,
and
I think
it's crumbling.
If I'm not mistaken, I think it's a Daniel Arsham snarkitecture, which is, you don't have to say it, I'll say it. It's terrible. I think that's what it is. And I think it's terrible. Just to clarify, I want to be sure that I'm saying both things very clearly.
But it is another example of fetishizing physical media in the digital context.
We should probably spell fetishizing, P-H-Y-T-I-F, fetish, you know, like we can just...
I think we should.
We neologized that. We just invented that. Shouts to Inventing Words on podcast. So this 2 Chainz album reminded us of all these other things.
Yeah.
And again, what that tells me is either these artists or their art directors have some kind of... you know what it tells me? They're like over 30.
Right.
Or over 35.
They have the experience of knowing what music is in a physical form. They have the experience of taking a piece of music from a store, taking it home with you, and feeling like these sounds that are coming into my ears belong to this thing that I am holding, which is not something we have anymore.
I actually wonder with this 2 Chainz one, like I think a CD, people know what a kids know what a CD is.
Sure.
Even if they don't use them, they know what a record is. I wonder if you're 16 and you look at this, is this like a supermarket? Like, is this a milk crate?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it might not have any resonance at all for you.
And we don't know. Maybe the reference is milk crates. Maybe it's about milk and
okay.
not records.
Yes. 2 Chainz, let us know at popcastnytimes.com if this was a milk reference and we just really biffed the whole thing.
Right. We're putting it in a category it doesn't belong.
It's totally, totally plausible. So Urban Outfitters has every record on vinyl that ever seems to exist. There's so many Urban Outfitters exclusives. I have to be honest, I did buy a copped The Cruel Intentions limited edition pink vinyl reissue.
It was the one thing in the store that I think you must have.
I was telling Teddy before, like, it's very rare for me to be in a record store in 2019, period. It's even rarer to see something I want and don't have, and it's even rarer that it brings me joy. This, all of those things. I'm going to put this up in my home office.
Oh, good.
I mean, maybe I'll pop the seal. I don't know. Maybe I will. Maybe I won't. But frame it. I probably should. I should have bought. They sold frames.
They sold
album cover frames. It was like on the next table over.
Wow.
So they sold album cover frames. They also sell turntables. I mean, you know, if you want a good starter collection for your vinyl, go to Urban Outfitters. It'll only cost you about $700 to get a good starter collection going.
It's funny that built into buying the vinyl is also worshiping the vinyl.
Yes.
You buy the frames in the same aisle that you buy them.
And also,
themselves.
Like, if you put the vinyl in the frame, then you don't actually play the vinyl?
No.
Do you think there's a vinyl frame where you can, like, stick your hand in but still take out the record?
There probably is. Or you just put the inner sleeve somewhere else so you can have access to it.
It's very complicated. One of the records that we saw there, you said, is your favorite album cover of the year.
Oh, yeah. Well, It's no Young Thug.
But it's close.
It's one of my favorite album covers of the year. It's the Vampire Weekend cover, which I think has
That's
done,
Father of the Bride.
Father of the Bride. I think they've done a really good job of adapting the art to all contexts. And we can talk about the vinyl for a second. It had the sort of clip art picture of the Earth that's in the middle of it.
Is it a picture or is it an illustration?
It's kind of a clip art, sort of clip art.
Okay.
Earth.
So yeah,
kind of like '90s clip art Earth.
Describe it to the people who have not seen the album cover.
Yeah. So in the middle of the cover is, like I said, a clip art illustration of the Earth. Very bright. Green and blue on a white background. Surrounding the Earth is the type, Father of the Bride.
Right.
On the left side of the cover is an orange stripe, which I think is kind of an abstracted reference to old CD packages because it's sort of where the side of the jewel case would be.
Yeah, it was like a spine.
Yeah.
It was like a trompe l'oeil of a spine.
Exactly.
Basically.
It kind of like makes you feel the feeling of looking at a CD cover without actually like putting a picture of a jewel case.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the bottom it has the Sony logo, which is also another reference to, I think, a time, especially in CD design, especially early CD design, where, you know, labels didn't exactly know what to do with this new format. So when they would release the vinyl version on CD, they would just put the you know, logo of the label in the middle of the album cover.
Let's listen, actually, to a Vampire Weekend song. Let's listen to Unbearably White.
Story gets told. To tell it myself would be unbearably bold. Presented with darkness, we turn to the light. Could have been smart with just unbearably bright. Avalanche coming. Don't cover your eyes. It's what you thought that you wanted. It's still a surprise. It's hard on the body. It's hard on the mind.
There was a cleanliness to that album cover that translated really well in the vinyl scale.
Absolutely.
But also looked like, to me, I immediately recognized it from having seen it digitally. I don't possess any physical copy of that record. But immediately, like from across the room, I was like, that's the Vampire Weekend cover. Like, you just know.
Kind of like the banana, kind of like the prism we were talking about. It works really well as an illustration in both the large vinyl context and online. And they've done a really good job also, it should be said, of spinning that out into lots of other contexts. If I'm listening to the album on Spotify, for instance, I get a sort of animated GIF of the the Earth rotating around the type.
Right, which I was unaware of.
Which is really fun.
So I guess, and I've not encountered that in any context, but maybe I wonder, there must be other ones that have a version of that. So let's talk about the kind of ideology of album art, because bringing up that point really underscores the fact that in the digital age, not only does it not have to have the same kind of legibility that we would have associated with a CD cover or a LP cover, but it also doesn't have to be an image.
No, and it doesn't have to be the same thing everywhere you see it.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, and going back to the Post Malone thing, when we got to the store and finally found the Post Malone vinyl, you said, "What do you think of this?" And I was like, "Oh, it's kind of disturbing." I didn't actually even know that it was the same album.
I'm trying to find the picture because it was like a barbed wire coming out of an eye.
Exactly. It's like barbed wire sort of holding open an eye, Clockwork Orange style.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is, I think the barbed wire repeats as an illustrated motif on the jewel case.
Oh, okay.
It's like black on yellow barbed wire. I'm just going from memory there.
Fair.
So there is that barbed wire motif tying them together. Otherwise, this is a photograph, a very close-up photograph of an eye on the vinyl. And then online, it's a picture of a jewel case. I mean, they couldn't be more different.
And again, and this is a thing that I often think about the internet in a lot of contexts, not specifically this context, but there is a kind of how do I describe it? There's like a baseline 5% to 10% uncertainty, instability on the internet. Everything could be just a little bit wrong, a little bit off, a little bit untrue. And I think having a situation where the album cover is one thing in one setting and another thing in another setting, and even, you know, we go into the store and you're like, I don't even know if this is the thing I'm supposed to be looking for. Where is the truth value? Like, what's the real album cover?
What's the real album cover?
Right, and we just don't know anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I was actually thinking, sort of on the train over to see you here, Spotify should have a setting. I mean, iTunes Music should have a setting where you don't have to do an album cover.
Mm.
Just, I mean, I know you talk a lot on this show about the album kind of not being a relevant format anymore for most artists and that people are kind of adapting into this new way of just releasing songs when they have them ready for the people that want to hear them. And I think, you know, there are people out there that still take album art very seriously,
absolutely,
that still do a really good job of thinking about all the different contexts and how it can play out. There are other people who are, you know, clearly just like, we got to put something in this square because we're putting music online now. And I think they shouldn't have to.
No, I think that's fair. And especially, look, you know, every medium kind of creates its own artistic language, its own lingua franca. And digital playlists, like unless you're scrolling through a new playlist on Spotify or Apple Music, that's maybe taking up a quarter of your phone screen.
Yeah.
Maybe less, maybe a fifth of your phone screen. That's probably the biggest art that you'll see of any song or album that you're listening to. And so, now that said, I do think that design talent, quote unquote, is more accessible, more widespread. The boundaries for what is considered good design are probably looser, and they're probably encompassing, the umbrella is much wider.
Absolutely. Now, and probably things are going out there that are being considered album art because they are the thumbnail on Spotify that no one would have thought to do, you know, if they were doing a CD cover. They had to think about how it, you know, went with the booklet or how it wrapped around to the back of the LP. And the fact that you can just say, okay, this is really just a square I have to work with here, and it's a square that people are going to see at this size. Can we do something a little more tossed off than normal, but still is cool for what it is?
It's funny you mentioned that, because like recently I was talking with someone who had asked me if I could like write liner notes for a record that they were working on, which I don't think I would have been able to do.
Huh.
But so they were having this conversation, and I was like, well, I don't even know if I'm allowed, the ethics rules, yada, yada, yada. And then like somewhere in the middle of the conversation, he's like, actually, I just realized it's a digital record and there are no liner notes. So like,
wow.
Never mind.
No, it's interesting. So, I was also thinking about how, you know, if I'm listening to an album now that I'm really interested in, and, you know, whereas before I might have had the vinyl open or been looking through the CD booklet, reading the lyrics.
As you go.
Right. Now, if I want to do that, I have to have multiple tabs open. I mean, it's just a different experience. It's not all kind of contained into one thing.
Yeah, although low-key, I did get a physical The Taylor album.
Right. Great.
It exists. It was nice to have that physical.
To have the booklet. To read the,
To be able to have like an interactive yada, yada, yada.
And the booklet was, I guess, in my prime music buying years, the thing, the CD booklet.
Absolutely.
And that's what came about in an age where there was a similar problem for designers that there is now, which is that record covers were going from being 12 by 12 inch giant things that people, you know, really could look at like a landscape to being 4 by 4 inch, you know, things in a CD. And I think the way they solved that problem was the CD booklet.
Right. But we learned something today.
Yes.
So there were probably 3 or 4 LPs that we saw at Urban Outfitters where the artwork very clearly was a thumbnail or a CD booklet sized image high res that was blown out to cover the LP and the graininess.
Yeah, legit low res stuff.
Man, that was rough. What was it? Maggie Rogers was one.
Yeah, very grainy.
Kalani was one. You brought this up, I think it was the Kelsey Ballerini record, and you were basically like, did the artist see this? Which is, I think, a totally legitimate question. Like, are they signing off? Do they know that when they go, when they, you know, when they, the LPs are shipped, that this is what they're going to look like?
And I'm not even slagging the designer because that designer probably wasn't considering the vinyl thing. I don't even know if the same person who did the original cover did the vinyl. And certainly the printing was, I think, very, you know, kind of dark and lackluster, and I'm not sure who looked at it. It's just, you know, it didn't look great.
Yeah, and I found it really frustrating because certainly when I think of any of the artists we just talked about, having a kind of, I don't know if aesthete is exactly the right word, but these are not people who are casual in their presentation.
Sure.
These aren't people who are arbitrary in how they present themselves. So the idea that this product that's $35 at a store somehow looks like a Xerox of a Xerox of a Xerox, I found really dispiriting.
Yeah, and not only that, but interestingly, some of the, you know, reprints of old albums, the Hotel California Eagles cover that was in there was clearly, you know, kind of a scan of an old album
cover.
That
was weird.
It was very grainy in a strange way.
You would think, look, there's got to be easily 75 versions of that album, you know, like
sure.
In the world.
Sure, and maybe I'm wrong or misremembering, and the original is actually very grainy or something.
But there's got to be, like, someone must have a high-quality vial of that somewhere.
Yeah.
Should we play an Eagles song? Because I know you're jamming out to the Eagles
lately. Oh, absolutely.
What do you want to hear off Hotel California?
Oh, gosh. Off Hotel California.
Yeah. Play the jam.
Play the title track, yeah.
All right. Everybody get your lighters out. This is Hotel California, and maybe the album cover is the friends we made along the way. So there were a couple records we saw that were recent records that I thought were extremely effective in the LP format and also CD digital. The Cardi B record.
Oh, yeah.
Really jumped out. Now, you noticed something with the LP size, those scan lines.
There's a nice little
detail. Explain what that is. Yeah.
Yeah. It's almost like the sort of lines you would see on an old TV that kind of like break up the image a little bit. They're just sort of very, very subtle stripes going through the image that would be totally not
like,
visible.
Almost
online.
Like a waveform type
thing. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. But I never noticed it in the smaller formatting.
It's unnoticeable in a smaller format. And it's a very subtle texture, but it serves to make what's a very kind of simple and iconic album cover. It gives it another little texture of interest when you're looking at it big.
And we were thinking Max Headroom when we saw it at that scale, which I sort of surprised I hadn't arrived at just kind of from the angle of the head and the color of the hair and everything. But when seeing it with those lines, immediately I knew that's what they were talking
about. It's just one more step into that kind of 80s vibe of the whole cover. And that's a great example of a cover that really, really works in both contexts.
Yeah, and you know, to our point earlier, I don't get the sense that designers are designing for multiple contexts. Because just to speak briefly about vinyl in this particular economic moment, there aren't a lot of vinyl pressing plants. There is, I don't want to say super high demand, but there's like reasonably high demand for vinyl at this particular moment in time. Not a lot of places where vinyl is pressed in this country. A lot of it's made elsewhere, but not a lot of places where vinyl is pressed. Pricing is premium. So vinyl, having an album, like a physical LP of your product, becomes like a prestige concern.
Absolutely.
It's not for everyone. It's basically only for superstars or people with extraordinarily dedicated fan bases. So I was sort of, given that, I was like especially kind of dispirited for the covers that didn't translate, because I'm just like, if you're really trying to entice your fans to pay $30, $35, you should take them seriously. But it also reminded me, this happened, there were like that City Girls album where with the really low res photo on the cover.
It was a low res JPEG.
Yeah. And we're just like, clearly the initial intention of that cover was not, this will be an LP someday. And
I think if it's going to be, somebody has to think about.
Yes.
Somebody has to think about that, and they have to design a new cover for that context, I think.
Can you, for me, a total design naive, can you explain how one, because you can basically take a big picture and make it small, but you can't really take a small picture and make it big. Can you like talk people through what it might mean to design for multiple formats, or how one could conceptually take something small and maybe make it resonate at a bigger size?
Sure. I mean, designing for multiple formats, I think the obvious thing would be you start big and then work small. And sometimes it just means you change the type size. So if it's for the, you know, thumbnail format, you want the type to be a little bigger so it can be read as a thumbnail. Although another thing we were talking about is that a lot of people are just saying no type at all on the thumbnail.
Yes.
Anyway, because every time you encounter it online, the name is right next to the image anyway.
Right. So basically online, it's one data point among many. When you're in the record store, it is the data point. It's
right.
It's the only data point. But online, it's always one. It's accompanied by other data points.
Remind me of the name of the record with the really grainy photograph that
Maggie Rogers?
The Maggie Rogers album.
She's like with her arms spread out.
That's a good example of something that like is so close to being there. All you would have to do to make the vinyl work, I think, is just add a typographic component or put the image in kind of a container of some kind. You would just want to add an extra design layer that's not on the thumbnail. The thumbnail, which is just kind of a vibey picture of her in the dusk night.
Who can say?
Yeah, which look. I mean, it is cool and vibey in a thumbnail.
Yeah, but we don't know what time of day it was.
Right.
For all we know, it was 2 p.m. and it's a bad filter and it's blown out 10 times.
But like, if somebody gave me that image and said, okay, we're doing the vinyl version of this and you're tasked with making that look interesting, I think I would think about adding more design elements. I would think about doing a package that wasn't just that photo blown up as best I could with nothing else on it, just like it is online. And I think that would be okay to have, you know, her name done in some type style on the record and then leave that out.
Right. Or even like debossed in some way, like you can get 3D with it, like in the same way that there was a textural element to the Vampire Weekend cover. Like you could create a textural element.
And I really appreciate people who maybe think only about the physical context and not the online context. I wanted to bring up this cover by a designer named David Rudnick, who just is, I think, one of the best designers of album art today. And he did a cover for the Nicholas Jaar album Sirens.
Okay.
That's essentially a scratch-off. So basically it has the stuff that you – the whole cover is just the stuff that you would see on a Lotto scratch-off, and it comes packaged with a quarter. So you scratch it off, and then there's kind of a cool design underneath, and the image that goes online is just kind of a rendering of what it looks like once you've kind of scratched off half of it. So you can still see some of the stuff, like the scratch-off material on there.
That sounds great.
Putting that extra effort into saying, like, all that matters is the physical thing, and even when you see it online, it's just going to be, like, one state of what the physical thing could be. I think that's really special. And it kind of reminds me of the Young Thug cover, which says sort of like, and I don't even know if they're doing a vinyl of that album. Are they? Do you know?
I don't know. Well, that's the other thing is right now, often the vinyl won't come for like 6 weeks. You know, it's like it just comes when it comes.
Right.
And it's not, you know, it's not the primary sales vehicle. It's not the primary listening vehicle. So it just sort of shows up at some point. And another reason it's prestige is anyone can listen to a record on Spotify. But then you demonstrate your loyalty as a fan by saying, I'm going to go to the store and I'm going to spend $30 on this thing.
And by giving them a very complex design to look at, something that, okay, sure, looks cool on Spotify, but if you really look at it up close, there's a lot to kind of take in. You're giving a gift to your fans.
I totally agree. Increasingly, the way artists make money is not necessarily by music. It's by merchandise, obviously touring and whatnot. Like when we were at Urban Outfitters, there's like everywhere you look, there's a Billie Eilish thing. Billie Eilish. There's Billie Eilish shirts and yada yadas. It's just, you know, everybody, merch is incredibly important. So there's an understanding on the part of especially young artists that not only can they monetize fandom in that way, but that kids more than ever are willing to incorporate a musician into their outfit and into their sort of day in, day out lives. Now, that's very special. I've always said, and I said this on Popcast a few times, that vinyl does feel increasingly like merch to me. And I'm not saying that kids don't play vinyl, they don't DJ vinyl. Obviously, we saw they were selling turntables there, those little Crosley, like fake old ones.
Yeah.
Not saying that they don't play it, but it does feel like a way to show your loyalty, to like have it's a poster. It's a 12 by 12 poster that you can like hang up in your room.
Well, it's just so interesting that the idea of music as a physical product has become a novelty.
Right.
Versus
a pure novelty.
Versus how I just understood it for most of my life, which is like if I want to have music to listen to, I have to go to the music store, flip through a bunch of physical things and take one of them home and pay money for it. But that was a brief period of time. I mean, before records existed, music wasn't a physical object. It was just something that came through the air to you. You had to go see the you can't own the band, you know, you have to go see it. And then for, you know, 100 years or whatever it was, we would have these physical objects, and the album cover was a way of saying, okay, this is what that looks like, I guess. This is what this physical product looks like.
Yeah.
And so the fact that we even have album covers at all online, it's just a vestige of a day where music was a physical product, which it no longer is.
Right, and maybe to your point earlier, maybe record labels / streaming services / artists will render them obsolete. Maybe there's some other data point will become the thing instead of an art-driven data point.
Or multiple art-driven data points.
Right.
Or, I mean, you know, I didn't come on the podcast to argue against album artists.
No, it's fine. Well,
I certainly love it.
Well, okay, so we should probably spend a little bit of time celebrating great album art and album art design.
Ah, yes.
So you bought some books. So why don't you talk us through a little bit about what you've brought?
Well, the one I'm holding now, it's called Vinyl Album Cover Art, the Complete Hypnosis Catalog. And Hypnosis was a design studio in the 60s and 70s that did a lot of famous album covers for Pink Floyd, for T-Rex, for Electric Light Orchestra, a lot of really cool kind of surreal imagery, a lot of covers that folded back around, so really widescreen images where the front cover was only half of the image, and then you had to turn it over to the back to see the other half of it.
Which we noticed was the SZA album had that.
The only album we saw that had that, which I think I was really impressed.
Yeah, that was good, because obviously, I mean, I don't have the CD booklet for that. Maybe it's like that on the CD booklet as well. But if you compare the SZA album to the Betty Who album, where there was like there's like a square on the back.
Oh, right. They didn't,
that was like a smaller square.
They clearly had no idea what to do with the back cover.
Yeah, like there was some poor intern. It was just like, it's due in 10 minutes. It's a purple square. It's just a smaller square. That's the joke. It's a smaller square.
Yeah.
Anyway, I hope that intern doesn't listen to the podcast.
Me too. Anyway, Hypnosis, great album cover design studio, and this book has really got a ton of treasures in it.
And so you also have the Factory Records book.
Yeah, which is Peter Saville, who's maybe the most famous album cover artist of all
Absolutely.
Time.
Absolutely. And so we're talking 1980s.
Joy Division.
Yeah, I mean, artful, new wave, new romantic.
Yeah. The most famous cover being the Joy Division cover, which is sort of 3D sound waves or something, like on a black background, which has become a meme all its own, which has sort of gone past just being even associated with Joy Division. And it's now, I think you can get a Mickey Mouse shirt in those like Joy Division waves at Disney World.
No.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh my God.
I saw it somewhere.
That sounds hard. That's hard.
I know. He kind of brought like high modernist design into the album art sphere.
Is there one that jumps out at you?
My favorite is Power Corruption Lies by New Order, which is just a beautiful still life painting of flowers and then kind of a weird in the corner grid of colors.
Let's
see. There's just something so beautiful and mysterious about it, and it immediately grabs you.
So nice.
Again, looks great online, looks great on the LP, looks great on the CD.
All right, let's listen to something off that album. Let's listen to Age of Consent by New Order. While we're talking, I feel like a way to bring it full circle is talk about Pen and Pixel for a minute.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So Pen and Pixel is, there's like these waves of kind of like recurrent interest in Pen and Pixel. I feel like I saw, maybe it was like a Red Bull Music Academy thing pretty recently.
There's a short documentary on, I think it's Noisy, the device thing, which is actually
Vertical.
Pretty good. It's a interview with the proprietor of Pen and Pixel. Yeah, I don't think you can talk about the Young Thug cover without talking about Pen and Pixel, because if you want to talk about intricately photoshopped hip-hop album covers, they were sort of the in-house design studio for Cash Money and No Limit in the 90s. And then ended up, they were in Houston, mm-hmm. and they would have artists fly from all over, you know, all over
right.
the country.
And they
kind of
just ran like
yeah.
they ran basically like a factory. I mean, they ran a factory and there was a time. I mean, I remember subscribing, you know, to The Source in that era, and there was and Murder Dog especially, where every ad had a Pen and Pixel album cover, like every ad.
Yeah.
And now this is in that time, especially in Southern gangster rap, where, you know, we're not talking major labels. We're talking like local entrepreneurs, heavy quote marks, who are starting their labels with whatever money they happen to have access to. And I think my sense is Pen and Pixel would basically like you show up with $5,000 in cash or $10,000 in cash.
Actually, this guy showed in this documentary, he showed the menu. They basically have a Chinese menu where if you come in with $800.
This is what you can get.
And so if John Camerano comes in to Pen and Pixel with $800,
yeah.
he says, I want an album cover. They're like, okay, what you get is our basic, which is just your face and a type treatment.
Mm-hmm.
That's all you get. Now that goes all the way up to $3,000. For $3,000, you get the super custom, which means whatever you want.
I want to play a song from a lesser known artist, but a very iconic Pen and Pixel album cover. It's for a rapper named Big Bear.
Oh yeah, I know this cover.
Big Bear, the album is called Doing Things. Let's hear Doing Things by Big Bear, and then we'll talk a little bit about this album cover.
They got me doing big things in the 9-8,
baby.
Big things. with some of that southern fried shit, you know? I had no choice, I had to make it. Our times became flagrant, my talents endangered. Going through shit like I'm an anus, wanna be famous. So Mr. Whitley made the changes, hooked this entertainer. Player's a gamer, he bout the paper. It's in the nature, Christopher Miller's another player. Make sure you pay your proper or stop you from ever playing. Shoot, you gang spit, my clicks harder than our lyrics.
This album cover often falls on like many people's lists of worst album covers, which I think is so astonishingly short-sighted.
Disagree.
Strong disagree. So Big Bear, it's the classic Pen and Pixel, artist name in the skyline, album title along the bottom with like a little bit of like a shiny bling action to
it. Yeah, don't forget the name Big Bear. The skyline title is dripping with honey.
Yeah, oh, of course. Yeah, off the sides. Yeah, for sure. So Big Bear sitting in the middle. Now it's clearly, he's clearly Photoshopped. This is not his outfit he's wearing, I don't think.
Mm. Could be.
I don't know. That neckline doesn't look very natural.
It is a weird neckline.
It's a very strange
neckline.
Still
could be the outfit.
You're right. Maybe it's a napkin. Do you think that's what that is?
Oh, he's at the table. Yeah, he's wearing a very...
It's like an ascot?
Sort of like an ascot napkin. I think it could be a bib of some kind.
Yeah, okay. So it's a bibscot.
A velvety bibscot.
It's a velvety bibscot. He's wearing a smoking jacket. He's got a nice Rolex-esque watch.
He is smoking a cigar.
Yes. And then there's another cigar in front of him that is held by the bear. Okay, so just, I'm sorry. I'm not even clarifying. He's sitting in the center, and then on the left is a bear looking directly at you.
Yeah.
And on the right is a bear looking slightly to the side wearing sunglasses.
And then behind him are two more bears.
Right. Those bears are like security bears.
Yeah, they're in some purple robes.
And one of them is smoking a cigar.
Right.
The other one is not. Maybe he didn't have the extra $100 to have the other bear.
Oh, he got the custom. This is there's no way this isn't.
Also, what's on the
top
table?
Dollar.
What do bears eat? Do they eat strawberries?
According to this cover, they eat strawberries, grapes, looks like some oats or something.
Yeah, what are those things? I don't know. There's strawberries, there's grapes. Are those like carrots? Like sort of like, I don't know what these things are. Anyway,
it does look like it could be a carrot.
There's a platter full of berries and vegetables. And these bears are just, they're chilling.
The bear on the left looks like he's drinking some kind of hot toddy.
Yeah, I was wondering what that was. It's a beverage for sure.
It's a beverage and it's gleaming. There's a sort of a bling on the beverage.
So this album cover is amazing. Like, just, this is not a debate.
All these
people who put this on worst album covers list, like, retire. Like, this is not, you're not doing your job right. This is a special album cover, and we are still in 2019 talking about Big Bear.
No, you could look at it for a very long time. I've never heard the album, but I know, I mean, I knew the album as soon as you
brought
it up.
It's not as fire as the album cover, but it's enjoyable.
Check it out.
You brought up the point when we were talking in the store that the Thug album is sort of like Oat Pen and Pixel.
Absolutely. I don't think it exists without this history. Because if you look at the Thug cover, if you look really closely at it, you can see a lot of the same kind of love put into the cutting out and the photoshopping and the blinging of all of these tiny thugs on the lawn. But the concept itself is a lot more streamlined and the end result is very refined.
Right. And it is this kind of, you know, we don't really think of album art in terms of absurdism, Dada, psychedelia, any of these kind of outre art practices. Pen and Pixel certainly falls near that, if not in that. This Thug album certainly does. And I think we should go out with the other album we saw at Urban Outfitters that definitely falls into that, which is Gunna. This is the underwater.
Oh, yeah.
So say again, I don't want to repeat. You tell me what you said when we saw the Gunna album
cover. Said it looked like he dove into a Ryan McGinley photograph from another place.
Oh, my God. So this is Drip or Drown 2, which came out a few months ago. it does. So Gunna, describe the album cover, because I know what you're saying, but like explain to the people what you're saying.
Okay, so it looks like Gunna has just dove into the water. He's fully clothed and he's got an umbrella.
Yeah, he's right. He has an umbrella in the water.
Yeah,
he's in the water.
We're fully underwater. And behind him are these sort of ethereal, I mean, it should be said, naked white women.
There you go.
Kind of doing flips and
they're floating.
Maybe floating. One of them has just jumped in herself. Yeah, I mean, I said two things about it. I said one, which is that it looked like he dove into a Ryan McGinley photograph from another place. And the second thing was it looks like if you tried to actually set up a photo shoot with a Pen and Pixel album art concept.
Right. If you were materializing
this
thing that is fundamentally abstract and dematerial.
Absolutely.
Gunna, Drip or Drown 2. So let's go out listening to, I mean, while we're speaking of things that are relationships between the material and the dematerial, the hard-edged and the abstract, let's go out with Baby Birkin by Gunna.
I know my purpose, European car, came with curtains. I have a daughter, I'm buying a baby Birkin. Good and got her legs hurting. Find a wave and got them ends early. Southside from the dirty. Power note, I keep a loaded 30. To kill the film so we don't gotta worry. Young gonna wanna jump in head first.
That's our show.
Thank you so much for having me, John.
Teddy Blanks is in the building.
All right.
Seeing beautiful things. I hope that through our words, you could picture pictures with your mind how they would look through your eyes. I think we did an okay job.
I hope so. I
think so. Listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Email me your favorite album covers, your favorite Pen and Pixel covers, your favorite Big Bear songs at podcast@nytimes.com, and subscribe to podcasts anywhere you get your audio content. You know where that is. Our producer in the room, but yet not really, is Dan Powell. And on a beach is Pedro Rosado from Head Stepper Media. We'll be back next week.
European car came with curtains. I have a daughter, I'm buying a baby Birkin. Good and got our legs hurting. Find a wave and got them ends early. Southside from the dirty, dirty. Power note, I keep a loaded 30. To kill the fence so we don't gotta worry. I put diamonds on the red bone. I pop the pill and now my head.